Good morning. Welcome to our roundtable panel for this Friday. It is January 3rd, and it is a snowy day for, I think, most of us, and certainly cold for all of us, and we'll be keeping you up to date on the weather throughout the day as things are opening and closing and digging out and all of that good stuff, and our news team is all over it, and we'll be reporting throughout the morning and afternoon and throughout the day on all of that good stuff. But we're going to talk about other topics as well today. Joining me for the discussion on our panel, WAMC's Alan Chartok. Good morning, Alan.
Yo, Joe.
And newsman Ray Graff is with us. Good morning, newsman Ray Graff.
Yo, Joe.
And Times Union Associate Editor Mike Spain in his fourth marathon session with us in a row. Here.
Good morning. Thank you
very much for being with us.
Yeah, I'm glad to come.
A delight. So let's talk about some of the things that are happening in this world of ours. And you think, I think typically at this time of year, we think of it as a, very, very slow. But there's some good stuff going on. I want to talk a little bit about Edward Snowden. We talked on, I believe it was Tuesday, how this was really, many felt, and I think, Mike, you expressed this, of being the top story of 2013 about Edward Snowden. And now the question is a very interesting editorial in the New York Times about ultimately asking the question of what should happen to Edward Snowden. And in the editorial, the New York Times says, considering the enormous value of the information he has revealed and the abuses he has exposed, Mr. Snowden deserves better than a life of permanent exile, fear, and flight. And I guess we'll start there this morning of what you make of that statement from the New York Times. Alan, we'll start with you.
Well, I agree with the New York Times. I think it was a gutsy move on their part. Rosemary and I both said this fairly early in the game and got a certain amount of comeuppance from some of our listeners who said he was a traitor, pure and simple, and therefore didn't deserve any of these considerations. But, you know, from where I sit, can't have a democracy unless you have information. And we found out there was a lot of information we didn't have, and the guy gave it to us. I feel that way about Assange also and WikiLeaks, because, you know, at the point at which you say everything is done to protect you, but we can't tell you what's going on, you are targeted for abuse. So that's what I think.
So it leads us to that question of what do you think should happen? What do you think should happen to Edward Snowden? And we look at other CNN has looked at other leakers, as they call them, whether it be Julian Assange or Daniel Ellsberg or Chelsea Manning, and how those cases have worked out. And Mike, I guess, had a
well. I regard. I mean, you know, from my generation, I regard Daniel Ellsberg as a hero. I mean, what do you think, Alan?
Sure.
I mean, yeah. I mean, he's regarded.
I mean,
history's been very good to him. He revealed that it was an unwinnable war, Vietnam, and his Pentagon Papers prove that. And it proved that authorities knew that, yet we were still sending American soldiers over there in this winless war. And it changed public opinion about the war. It helped, you know, bring about what really was the end of the U.S. involvement in the Vietnam conflict. And even though they did go after him and put him on trial, it was revealed that they were, you know, sneaking into his psychiatrist's office and trying to find out information about him, et cetera. And the charges were eventually dropped. And today I think he is regarded as, I mean, I know there are some people who disagree, but I think many people regard what he did as a positive thing ultimately. And it changed the course of U.S. foreign policy. And I think in, you know, when you look at it, Snowden's revelations kind of are doing the same thing. It's turning the tide. You know, it is making people realize that just having complete faith in the government to make wise choices and protect you at any cost, it does have a cost itself.
You know what, Mike? You show me any dictator in the history of this world, and I will show you the argument that they were protecting people and their security. You know, it almost always starts in some case. No, let me reject that. Take it back. In some cases, what happens is people are The people who rely on this kind of information, leaders are decent in their approach, but inevitably it turns into something that we don't like. And sometimes it's a balancing act. I think there are a lot of people who will say, I trust the government, I trust the cameras, I hope that nobody's listening to my phone calls, but if they do, I don't really care because I don't have anything to hide. And it all starts there. So, you show me a dictator, I'll show you somebody who makes the argument I'm protecting your safety.
Does it seem to be a partisan issue? Because it seems like people are all over the board.
Yeah.
We're looking last month, Attorney General Eric Holder said the conversation about balance between security and privacy is important, saying, quote, but I would not say what Snowden did is worthy of clemency.
Well, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Mike.
No, that's the official position, and I think it has to start from there. But I think it'll be an evolution before people. And already the evolution is things happen so much more quickly today because of the internet and social media. It gets conversations going. It might have taken 6 months to a year to have the opinion of Snowden change so much so dramatically. But for the New York Times to come out and say this guy is a whistleblower is amazing.
It's huge. Do you all know why the term of the FBI director is now limited?
J. Edgar?
J. Edgar had dossiers on every major political figure, no question. And he used them. And everybody was scared of him. Bobby Kennedy hated his guts, didn't dare. They didn't dare get rid of the guy. The death of J. Edgar Hoover, who some people consider a great American, and Stalin are similar in that both guys died and there were all kinds of people who were around them who were worried about what the file said, whether they were next on the list, and not that the two were the same, they weren't. But when you give that much power to anybody, it can really be offsetting.
North Korea, just think North Korea.
Sure. Yeah. Sure. One day you're sitting in your seat and you're the uncle of the guy.
And you don't applaud correctly.
they come and tap you on the shoulder and they take you outside and they shoot you. Mm. And by the way, if you read Khrushchev's memoir about his life or his autobiography, which has been pretty well substantiated now, they waited. Khrushchev and a group of others waited in a room. Beria came in. He thought he was going to be the new Stalin. They had him arrested, taken outside, and a while later he was shot. So, sometimes this thing has terrible consequences.
Did you want to say
hello?
Something, Ray? I was waiting for Ray, but I... his lips were moving, but I didn't hear a sound come out.
Sometimes that happens. Ray has this wonderful thing. I've done it for years to drive my brother and others crazy. My chair at New Paltz did it, Herman Walker. While you were speaking, he was making the same words with his mouth. It's enough to drive anybody crazy.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I was just going to say, is another possible strategy for Snowden one similar to what Ellsberg did, and that is face the music, get it all out in a trial, and ultimately for Ellsberg, it worked out. Is it, rather than being on the run, would it possibly make sense for Snowden to come back and face the music and let all this stuff come out and see what the public perception is at that time?
Well, it's risky. He could end up in a U.S. jail. Yeah.
You bet. And we have an attorney general, the top official in the country, making it clear that he doesn't dig the guy.
We are going back to the 60s.
And when you have the might of the federal government lined up against you, there's another issue here.
Well, the Nixon administration was lined up against Ellsberg and big time, and public opinion and independent judges prevailed, and he's a hero.
He did.
Yeah.
And they did, Michael, and one of the things you remember about an elevator is that they go up and down. Hmm. And do you get the metaphor? I mean, the truth is, I think by that time, people had had it. People were beginning to really have it with Nixon. So, the other thing that I'm fascinated by is the concept of motivation. Does the motivation of Ellsberg versus any of the others, Assange or Snowden, does the motivation count in terms of passing judgment on them? Do you know what I'm saying?
Well, I think motivation is an interesting thing to look at in this, and it's actually something that is employed in the editorial in the Times. In fact, I want to get to a couple of those points. Let's take a quick break, and then when we come back, we'll talk about that a little bit, because I want to bring there's several points of the Times editorial mix that I want to talk a little bit about. We welcome your comments. roundtable@wamc.org. We will continue our conversation after this short break.
Support for WAMC comes from Gordon Fire Equipment, offering fire extinguisher service and inspections to businesses and organizations in the Hudson Valley, family-owned since 1956, gordonfire.com. Casual Set, Stuyvesant Plaza, featuring modern women's fashions and accessories, serving the Capital Region for over 40 years, 518-482-7136. And Buttermilk Falls Inn, Milton, a 75-acre Hudson Riverfront resort with lodging, a farm-to-table restaurant, and spa, buttermilkfallsinn.com.
Welcome back to our roundtable panel and our discussion. WAMC's Alan Chartok is here, newsman Ray Graff, and Times Union Associate Editor Mike Spain is here, and we welcome your comments. We were talking about Edward Snowden before the break, and we continue. The president has said that Mr. Snowden should come home to face charges in court, and suggested that if Snowden had wanted to avoid criminal charges, he could have simply told his superiors about the abuses, acting in other words, as a whistleblower. In fact, that executive order did not apply to contractors, only to intelligence employees, rendering its protections useless to Mr. Snowden, reading from the Times editorial now. More important, Mr. Snowden told the Washington Post earlier this month that he did report his misgivings to two superiors at the agency, showing them the volume of data collected by the NSA, and that they took no action. The NSA says there was no evidence of this. That's almost certainly because the agency and its leaders don't consider these collection programs to be an abuse and would never have acted on Mr. Snowden's concerns. In retrospect, Snowden was clearly justified in believing that the only way to blow the whistle on this kind of intelligence gathering was to expose it to the public and let the resulting Fuhrer do the work his superiors would not. Beyond the mass collection of phone and internet data, consider just a few of the violations that he revealed or the legal actions he provoked. One, the NSA broke federal privacy laws or exceeded its authority thousands of times per year, according to the agency's own internal auditor. The agency broke into the communications links of major data centers around the world, allowing it to spy on hundreds of millions of user accounts and infuriating the internet companies that own the centers. Three, the NSA systematically undermined the basic encryption systems of the internet, making it impossible to know if sensitive banking or medical data is truly private. Four, his leaks revealed that James Clapper Jr., the director of National Intelligence, lied to Congress when testifying in March that the NSA was not collecting data on millions of Americans. And the list goes on. We should note also that the Guardian newspaper had a very similar editorial in their New Year's edition as well. But I want to get back to what you were talking with what we just read in mind, Alan, about motive, of what it does, what brings a guy like this to the point of saying, okay, I'm going to put everything on the line.
Okay, so let's suppose for a second that the guy who does the leaking is, you know, for want of a better word, nuts. But that the information is critical to the American people. Should the consequences for the leaker be because they had a mental health problem? I don't think so. We just had a view sent to us, Joe, from Suzanne, who says, "The end does not justify the means. The impact of Snowden's thefts and leaks that propels all this discussion was not his work, but rather the public's desire to engage into a debate. It is the American people or the adults in the room making good from this national breach. The entire argument seems to be about the national discussion about what to do to change the NSA. Snowden did break the law. The government has other options, would learn whistleblower status and stave off a lot of damage to your country and its agencies and people. There might be need to be lenient in order to stop further leaks, but he does seem to deserve, but he does not seem to deserve hero status or broad clemency." As for the New York Times editorial, the Times had skin in the game all along. It chose to publish. Maybe it feels that it needs some vindication. And what does the news site does not want as many secret documents as it can get? But it is of great concern that we are conveying hero status on Snowden because we are feeling aggravated at the ends and ignoring the means. And that's from Suzanne. And while I don't agree with her, it's an interesting position.
Well written. Nicely
well, done. I think it's a valid point in the sense of, you know, obviously, yeah. Obviously the media does indeed have skin in the game.
Yeah, but Suzanne
well,
makes.
They do. Well, they do.
Yeah, yeah.
Go ahead, Mike.
We certainly do. I mean, it's the one of the key roles of media in society is to get information out because it's predicated on the belief that if people have more information and the right information, they'll make the right decisions, et cetera. But Suzanne's point, I think, was good about what his status would be. I think there is an in-between. I don't think he has to come back to, a ticker tape parade or anything like that. He should. I think it would be good to have him go through the process and in the process, have his case adjudicated and then maybe a suspended sentence or maybe his case would even be thrown out. It would be interesting to have what he did brought out in court and have it debated and then have the justice system sort of determine whether his motives and the result of his work mitigates the charges against him. And that would be an interesting test for the justice system. But in the end, his sentence could be suspended, and then time would really be the real decider on whether he is a hero or not. And that's for history.
One of the final
he could be sitting in jail forever.
Right.
I don't think he would be. I can't believe he would be. He would get his sentence commuted if nothing else.
Grumble.
This is what I believe. He might be 78 years old. But
suddenly we're in England. Rah, 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 rah.
So you don't know. Yeah.
That's right. There is a risk.
The final one of the final lines is the shrill brigade of his critics say that Mr. Snowden has done profound damage to intelligence operations of the United States, but none has presented the slightest proof that his disclosures really hurt the nation's security, which I think is a valid point as well.
Or tough noogies. I mean, you know, the fact is, if he's going to do it, he does it. Isn't anybody else in the room furious about the fact that we have alienated our closest allies like Angela Merkel and others tapping their phones and doing things like that? Bill from Nassau takes a contrary view.
We're gonna hold because we've got 10 seconds. Sure. And we gotta take a break. We'll be right back. Roundtable@wamc.org, roundtable@wamc.org, and we'll read from your thoughts and go to other topics next. Welcome back to the roundtable. Welcome back to our panel discussion. Alan Chartok, Ray Graff, Mike Spain, and me.
And you at home, the listener.
Thank you, Raymond.
Yeah.
We welcome your comments. A lot of people have checked in regarding our conversation about Edward Snowden. Let's begin with Carl, who writes, "I think there were likely many who consider Daniel Ellsberg nuts when he took the chance that he did, and he was a shrink." Rocco Rizzo writes, "I find it rather interesting that our president is calling for Snowden to come back to the U.S. and face charges, while he has not called for others who affected our country in far more worse ways to be prosecuted. I say when President Obama was first inaugurated, he would rather move forward than prosecute the former administration for taking the country into two wars based on lies. I also cite the banks whose policy was found to be illegal and led to the near financial collapse of our country. Bill writes, and Alan was starting to read this right before we went into the break. Bill writes, I agree that he exposed what he exposed is wrong, but he is not a hero. If he was, he would still be in this country, not Russia. Why is he shopping the files in South American countries? Ellsberg did not flee the country. Civil disobedience requires some responsibility. And Gene writes, while I don't believe that Snowden was some kind of patriot, he did show us that Congress was once again asleep at the wheel. I recall reading about this during George W. Bush's second term in office and feeling outraged that our elected representatives were taking such a casual attitude toward the NSA, vacuuming up everyone's phone calls. An article written back then by a software engineer for a large communications company said that he knew that our government was collecting everything, not just a few targeted conversations based upon the size and number of the cables connected to his company's servers. We thank you very much for all your letters. Any comments? Anybody want to comment on any of the letters?
Well, yes. Jeannie made one other point, and that I think is very interesting, and that is that Congress didn't do its job. And some of the congressmen were briefed, and they knew it. And now they're, of course, in hiding. And by the way, I don't happen to agree that civil disobedience means you have to agree to go to jail for the rest of your life. I think it was pretty heroic what he did. Anyway, I mean, I think it took a lot of guts. It was a profile in courage. And, you know, from my perspective, I don't think anybody demands that somebody sit in a jail cell because they did what was right.
But what about the point that the reader, that the listener made that, you know, here he is in other countries shopping this information around? Does that make him a patriotic whistleblower or something other than that?
Well, it depends what his motivation is, Ray. I don't know. I can tell you this much: if he's down in, if he's looking for a place to live, and he is saying, "I have all this information," you know, as long as it doesn't help our enemies, I don't see what's so bad about exposing what's going on from a different country.
Ray made another point during the break that I thought was could have been another bullet point in the New York Times editorial, and that is that he should be at least commended for revealing the grotesque negligence in security measures at the NSA for a single employee,
a contractor,
right? Good point. To be able to remove this much sensitive information shows that, you know, they were asleep at the wheel. You know,
absolutely.
I mean, so there's good that's coming from this. Perhaps because there's good that's coming from this, his status should mitigate his status, and he should not face long-term prison, perhaps, you know, or any consequences other than, I mean, he's still going to have trouble, you know, getting a job, I guess, when he gets back here. Of course, some people probably would like to hire him.
I thought you were going to applaud Ray for his comment he made during the break that these panels should be catered.
Well, you know, I don't recall saying that, but now that you
bravo, Ray.
Bloody
bravo,
Mary is not
bravo.
Here.
Not surprised.
You know what?
Let's move on to other issues, and there are other things to talk about. I found this interesting. This is also in the New York Times. It was published yesterday, as it was about John Kerry and ultimately looking to make this climate change and making a priority of a climate pact. And in his first year as Secretary of State, Mr. Kerry joined with the Russians to push Syria to turn over its chemical weapons, persuaded the Israelis and Palestinians to resume direct peace talks, and play the closing role in the interim nuclear agreement with Iran. But while the public's attention has been on his diplomacy in the Middle East, behind the scenes of the State Department, Mr. Kerry has initiated a systematic top-down push to create an agency-wide focus on global warming. And I find several things interesting about this report, one being that it is something that's behind the scenes and that it's, you know, not kind of front and center, which I think speaks to our, and I say our as a worldwide our, reluctance to sort of understand and fully act on these issues.
So it's a stealth effort.
Well, Yeah, and we certainly, and why is it a stealth effort?
Well, exactly,
Michael. That's the question. Is did he run it? I'm just going to raise some potential ideas. Did he run it by the Obama administration and said, okay, you can do it, but you know, we didn't sign Kyoto. We have other issues here that we're trying to work on. Did he get told to cool it? I mean, we don't know. I think it's a great thing that he's doing. I'm not a big Kerry fan, I'll be honest with you. And I think this is a terrific thing because, you know, we are facing the potential of a real catastrophe with this world. And the scientists tell us that. We know it. There are deniers, of course, but there are deniers of everything else. From my perspective, you know, it's just so far long in coming that it just needs to be done. And if he's doing it, great.
There is a line in this article in the Times where he says his goal is to become the lead broker of a global climate treaty in 2015 that will commit the United States and other nations to historic reductions in fossil fuel pollution. And you think of that compared to our reluctance and oftentimes just a hands-off approach to many of these treaties and pacts and commitments that we have had the opportunity to engage in over the last two or three decades.
That's right.
Well, wouldn't any treaty like this require congressional approval? I mean, it just seems like that's the obstacle. He may be able to make great progress on an international front, and then he brings it home, and that's going to be difficult.
And John McCain, in this piece later on, quite skeptical of those prospects. You know, John, who co-sponsored some legislation with him in the Senate and worked with him on these issues, is very skeptical of the possibility of major action in the Senate.
So, Ray, do you mean that if you can't do it, you shouldn't try?
I'm just saying what Senator McCain said. He's skeptical.
No, I get you.
Well, it just illustrates that the battle, it's two battles. One is to get worldwide agreement, which is a difficult task indeed. But the coming back home and selling it here is no easy thing either. I mean, it's going to be a difficult time to get this through for him. But you know, I don't disagree. I think it's a worthy effort.
I just wonder what has to happen to get it on the page of Congress and to become an acceptable thing to discuss and to talk about.
Well, climate change.
Well, you know, we've seen a lot of changes in our lives. As for example, take the whole question of gay rights. Who would have thought that we would be here now saying that gay folks, lesbian folks are allowed to marry? It would have been unthinkable 10 years ago, 5 years ago. And yet it really changed. So that's to me a terrific thing.
I agree with you, but the difference here is time is ticking. I mean, if we believe what we're told by the scientists, time is ticking.
That's right. That's my point. My point is that this is so important that somebody's got to do something. Look, John Kerry ran for president of the United States. He didn't make it. He didn't show himself to be a forceful, advocate of a lot of different ideas. And now he has a chance for redemption, and I think he's doing that.
Were you going to say anything?
No.
Okay, great. you want to get that, Alan? We can pot you down for a second if you want.
I'm okay.
Okay, good. All right. Just checking. Let's go to other issues. What's happening in the pages of the Times Union today?
Well, more reports of sexual harassment by members of the New York State Legislature. This one, again, involves the most recent case that has been getting a lot of talk in Albany. It's Western New York Assemblyman Dennis Grabasek. Two more women have come forward. That brings a total to six women now who have publicly accused him of creating a hostile work environment and, you know, acts of sexual harassment against them by the assemblymen. His, you know, these came out a few weeks ago. Assembly Speaker Sheldon Silver has said that if these allegations are true, the assemblymen should resign. It's being investigated. Of course, we know how long that can take. It can take up to 6 months for an Assembly Ethics and Guidance Committee to come out with recommendations. Just this past week, they came out with recommendations about Micah Kellner, a New York City assemblyman who was accused of sexual harassment, and the committee recommended that his office, that he go through some sexual harassment sensitivity training, and that he have no interns in his office going forward. And he's appealing that. You know, Kellner is appealing that. Meanwhile, the attorney for Dennis Grabaczak is saying that he does not want to reply at this time. They're still putting together their response, and they will have that at one point. But it's just another scandal rocking the legislature as it's trying to get underway for 2014.
Am I the only one who finds the term sensitivity training just to be insulting? I mean, you just should know better. Like, how do you train that?
Well,
don't be stupid.
Yes, don't be stupid. But I think that there are, you know, traditionally there are ways that people behave, language they use, just gestures they use that they're unaware of that were traditionally acceptable and no longer are. And by going through some kind of sensitivity training, it heightens your awareness of that and how you deal with people of other genders or people of other ethnic groups.
Act like a human
being. Well, you're right. You know, just be a good person. You know,
I don't know whether.
I don't know that sensitivity training would have any impact if these allegations are true. It doesn't sound like, you know, that would even matter. And again, these are allegations, but six women now have publicly put their name on complaints that that he has, Assemblyman Grabaczak has behaved this way. So it is compelling, and it does reveal a real cultural problem at that level when you count others.
It also shows that Shelley Silver has learned something here. You remember that he paid off. He had the assembly using taxpayer money to pay off the last complaint, major complaint, and he's not going to do that again. And eventually, he got around to doing the right thing. And I like Shelley a lot, and I think everybody can learn. And I think he has learned that this is an area where you just come down hard on the person who is who is the presumed offender, although everybody has rights.
Yep.
Absolutely. Anything else you want to mention?
Well, interestingly, the governor has announced that Mount McGregor Correctional Facility in Saratoga County, in the town of Moreau, will close. If anybody's been up that way, it's sitting on top of this big hill. It's a beautiful location. So
right near Grant's Cottage.
Right.
Good spot for a casino, eh?
It is indeed. And the town board has passed a resolution that says they're interested in receiving proposals from developers. They'd love to turn that mountaintop prison into a great casino.
The Ulysses S. Grant Casino.
There you go.
$50 bills is what?
Yeah, I think it's on the 50, right?
You check in, you get a jumpsuit. It's pretty nice.
And if you the photo that
Grant had his vices.
The photo from our files.
I can take a drink.
You get three tombs. Right here, boom.
Yeah. Boom. But the hilltop location, it looks like it would fit a great Hollywood sign. It could say, Grant's Casino. And it does show that there is more interest, at least by communities, to be involved in the very interesting process that will unfold in the next 6 months as the state's gaming and wagering board oversees the licensing of casinos in upstate New York. So, this is just one more little wrinkle in that.
And the other part of that, Michael, that is so interesting is the Saratoga reaction to that.
Yes.
Now, you'll remember that Saratoga turned down, right, the opportunity to have when the voters said no. Although they do have, what do they call that, Racino?
Video lottery terminals.
Yeah, right. They want another chance over there. So now you see the people, some of the movers and shakers in Saratoga who want the casino, using the Moreau thing as, you know, a somewhat of a divided tribal thing. You know, they're doing it. We can't let them do it. You know, they'll get all the money. We need the money. And there is, of course, some consequence to all that.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll wrap up our conversation for this morning in the panel discussion. We welcome your thoughts as always. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We'll be back after this short break.
Support for WAMC comes from Smith College Museum of Art, presenting River of Gold, pre-Columbian treasures from CTO Conti, gold work from an ancient American society in central Panama, smith.edu/artmuseum for info, and Harney & Sons Fine Teas, specializing in tea for over 30 years, offering 200 different varieties of tea, accessories, and more in Millerton, Soho, and online, harney.com.
Let's be heard. Good afternoon, everyone. The telephone lines are open. The number to call from Connecticut, 203-862-WABC. From New Jersey, 201-489-WABC. From New York or anywhere else, 212-568.
The gravelly tones of one Bob Grant, the right-wing talk radio host who's, was testy, was confrontational, and certainly made him a dominant voice during the drive time hours in New York and syndicated throughout the country for decades, died on Tuesday in New Jersey. He was 84 years old. His death was announced by WABC, where he attracted his biggest audiences. He thrived on the radio despite being boycotted for racist remarks and despite a trademark habit of hanging up on his own callers. And he was quite a presence and sort of, I think, in many ways, ushered in the current wave of talk radio that we have today. Alan, what do you think about Bob Grant?
You know, I was told by my mother and others that when somebody died, shut up.
Yeah. All right.
The guy was a blatant racist. He said the most insulting, terrible things, and he appealed to the worst part of the human race, and especially of the American people, and a lot of people bought it, and that's what I find so frightening.
Well, we're going to play. Here's a clip of Bob Grant in action. This is from 1994. This is the day of the gubernatorial election in New York between Mario Cuomo and George Pataki.
Dear Mr. Bob Grant, this is a follow-up to yesterday's facts. I just wanted to let you know that there are Cuomo posters on every signal light pole on every corner surrounding the Board of Elections at 200 Barrack Street. I work in the same building. I tore down five or six of them this morning and will continue to do the same throughout the day. Interestingly, the Cuomo campaign must be expecting this kind of retaliation from Pataki supporters following the police incident in Williamsburg, because they have placed these posters very high up on the pole. I am 6 feet 4 inches tall, and I needed to climb up a bit to reach most of them. The disgusting thing is that these posters were all put up since about 5:30 p.m. yesterday, which means that Cuomo supporters were using stepladders in the dark to place them, and of course, no police stopped them. And yet the police selectively took down the Pataki signs, and when William Bratton was questioned about it, he became loutish, boorish, crude, rude, insulting, and shows that definitely there is a double standard. And why? Well, figure it out.
How much power do you think he had, Alan?
Oh, well, I think when anybody is believed by a portion of the American people, that they have a lot of power.
They were saying there was an article, or I guess one of the articles I was reading about in the obituaries was saying that, you know, after that election, George Pataki went on the show and thanked him and said that in no small part did he feel that he played a role in him being elected.
And by the way, when you point out that the law is being broken, that's not a terrible thing. On the other hand, when you say racist things, which he did all the time, that was a terrible thing. So, you know, it isn't as if every word that came out of the guy's mouth was wrong. If people were violating the law and putting up posters when they shouldn't have, and it wouldn't be the first time the Cuomo people were accused of it. You'll remember the Koch election,
yeah, right.
In which, you know, vote for Cuomo, not the homo, and rest of it. This that's a terrible thing. And as far as I know, it's a good thing for any commentator to make those points.
Well, Bob Grant has passed away at the age of 84, and certainly a voice of New York, without a doubt.
Alan, as a guy who has made a career of giving views on many topics, do you at least say that, you know, Grant, who was one of those first ones after the fairness doctrine was repealed,
yeah,
who went on and, you know, whether you liked what he said or not, said his views without having to worry about putting the opposing views on. So in a way, don't you think it opened it up for what people on all political sides have done?
No. You know,
but you wouldn't be able to do what you did without him doing what he did.
No, I don't. I take some exception to that. I mean, I think that when you do racist and homophobic and other comments like that, no.
I'm not saying you ever did that. I'm just saying that from a political standpoint and political commentary, didn't he open a door that some who you might agree with much more are able to use?
Speaking of opening a door.
No, but I think it's a question.
Oh, we're
I
done?
Think it's a question of, I think it's political response. I think there's something called responsibility, and
okay,
he wasn't.
All right.
We're going to leave it there, and we will always welcome your feedback. It is roundtable at WAMC.org. Mike Spain, thank you very much for being with us, as always. We'll talk to you next week. Thank
That's
you.
Great. Yeah.
Ray Graff, thank you. And
thanks.
Alan,
have a great
thank
weekend.
You very much. We'll be back
thank
right
you,
after
Rico.
This short break.